Good morning, everyone. Coming up on today's show, the CDC says the Delta variant is the most contagious disease we've ever seen. And is it too late to get the vaccine for some people? One doctor says, yes, don't wait until you're on and being intubated inside of a hospital bed before you need to get the vaccine. And President Biden to business leaders, hey, maybe you should pay a better wage and then you might be able to actually hire people. Imagine that. He actually said that right to business leaders. An eviction nightmare. July 31st, guys, is the deadline when millions of people face eviction. So why are billions of dollars in rental assistance dollars still not being sent out? A fraction of them have been sent out. We'll get to all of that and more on the show today. Morning Invest starts right now. Welcome in to Morning Invest on this Friday. Coming up on the show today, we've got a very busy show. We're going to be talking about the CDC and so much more. Hello, everybody. Hope everyone's doing great. Michelle Brown is here. Taylor's here. Drop me a comment in the chat. Good morning to everybody. Philip is in the control booth today. David is taking Clarice back.
Yeah, I'm here for a second. I'm taking her back today. She's going to get spay, and then she goes up for adoption, and they want her back by 7, so I kind of want to go with her because we've bonded in a week.
You gotta stop doing this to yourself.
I know. I told Jennifer we're not doing it again. I said I can't. I just, especially like a dog like her, like I want to keep her so bad, but I just can't.
Yeah,
so
I would have
keep happening.
This is Philip. I would have ended up with every dog. And there's no way I can take one back.
Yeah. No. I was in there cuddling with her. So I'm gonna go back in there and lay with her for a while before we got to get up and get her ready.
Learn your lesson.
Learn
your lesson, pal. Learn your lesson. Well, we've got a jam-packed show for you today, so let's get right to it. First story on the docket today is concerns over this Delta variant. The CDC now saying that this is massively problematic. Do you remember, though, I mean, like a few weeks ago, when President Biden threw a big 4th of July party on the South Lawn of the White House to declare independence from the virus? Well, it looks like that was all premature, and now there are major concerns over this new Delta variant. The CDC issuing a warning this morning saying that the Delta variant is the most contagious disease they've ever seen. It spreads faster than anything they've ever seen. Great, great. That's good news. And that 83% of new cases are from the Delta variant. 83% of cases. What about the masks? Well, for now, it looks like the CDC will not go back to full masking again. We heard from the CDC yesterday saying this about masking policy. Take a listen.
Against a common enemy, SARS-CoV-2 and the Delta variant. The Delta variant is spreading with incredible efficiency and now represents more than 83% of the virus circulating in the United States. Compared to the virus we had circulating initially in the United States at the start of the pandemic, the Delta variant is more aggressive and much more transmissible than previously circulating strains. It is one of the most infectious respiratory viruses we know of and that I have seen in my 20-year career.
What we're really dealing with is effectiveness against serious disease leading to hospitalization and in some cases death. And since the Delta variant is, as Dr. Walensky said, now 83% in this country, it's the one we're dealing with. So even though we are seeing infections after vaccination, referred commonly to as breakthrough infections, the effectiveness against severe disease is still substantial, which is yet again another argument which all of us say continually, get vaccinated. It offers good protection against disease.
So no mask changes, but there's plenty of school districts that are saying, hey, you know, we're going to be actually adding masks. We're going to be putting masks back into place for kids going back to school. I mean, think about it. It's crazy to think. I mean, already, you know, people doing back to school shopping, if you can already, I mean, it's kind of crazy to think. We're not even in August yet, but here we go. I feel like we just started the summer, don't you? And here we are already talking about back to school time. Although as my little 4-year-old was running around today crying about a diary key that she says her sister stole from her, and it took an hour of her crying and going back and forth over this stupid diary key, perhaps school can't come soon enough. But, I mean, the real question, though, too, about this, so then what about these breakthrough cases? You know, all these breakthrough cases we're hearing about. Are there a ton of them? you know, where people are getting sick even after they're vaccinated. Here's the New York Times on this. And it's interesting to look at this data. So the worrying trend, they say, may seem to be these breakthrough infections, those occurring in vaccinated people. They're still relatively uncommon, experts say. And those that cause serious illness, hospitalization, or death even more so. So very, very rare. More than 97% of people hospitalized for COVID-19 are unvaccinated, according to the latest data this morning. They say the takeaway message remains, if you're vaccinated, you're protected, an infectious disease specialist says, Dr. Celine Grounder at the Bellevue Hospital in New York. You're not going to end up with severe disease, hospitalization, or death if you're vaccinated. Still, though, they say, vaccinated people can come down with infections, overwhelmingly asymptomatic or mild. That may come as a surprise to many vaccinated Americans who often assume that they're completely shielded from the virus, and breakthrough infections raise the possibility, as yet unresolved, that vaccinated people may spread the virus to other people. Where do you guys come down on this? I mean, how many of you know vaccinated people that have gotten the virus? Was it severe? Was it mild? They end up dying from it? Where do you, you know, what is the latest on this?
Well, there's an article that I was reading that talked about there like upwards of a million people having very serious adverse effects to it, but we're not, like, I don't understand why we don't hear about any of that. And that's more than who have died, like people that are going to maybe have lifelong side effects. I'll have to share. I think I shared that article with you, but I don't know if you had a chance to read it. It's a long article.
I'd love to see that. I mean, you know, it's, so if that's the case, you know, why aren't we hearing more about that? If there's really truly like a million people that are having adverse effects of the vaccine, why aren't we hearing more about that? But there's a lot of fear mongering going around right now about this idea of, you know, breakthrough vaccine. You know, if you had a vaccine, oh my God, what if you get sick again? Then maybe that, you know. So according to this latest data, it's asymptomatic or mild at best.
Well, and did they start doing a different test? Like when did they start saying, okay, so now we're doing these same tests, we're doing these swabs, but now look, there's a Delta variant attached to it. Like how in the heck, like what changed with the test or whatever that they knew that that just sprung up?
I don't think we know. I mean, I'd love to know that because there's another test.
Yeah. And now there's another one that they're saying that started in Houston, another variant.
Right. Yeah. So we've got the Houston, and then of course, not to mention we've got the Havana syndrome. We got that on the, and then this morning in the newsletter we talked about there's a fungus.
Well, the Havana syndrome though, Clayton, that was started by socialism.
Yeah, that's just socialism, and it's just affecting CIA people apparently. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about the Havana syndrome. But I have to say, I really am worried about this Delta variant. You know, hearing from medical professionals, hearing from people in the hospitals who are seeing a rise in cases. And I guess once they get the people in there, they're drawing their blood and they're looking what's in their blood to see it. So the rise in surge in cases at the hospitals is the concern. Like Missouri, for instance, Missouri in southeastern Missouri being flooded with cases, so much so that they had to bring in ambulances and assistive care from Arkansas to help out at hospitals in Missouri. And they've been demanding, like the health professionals there have been saying, hey, like, get over your politics. I don't care where you come down on this. Like, we literally don't have beds available right now in our hospitals. So put all your politics aside. Put all your crazy Alex Jones stuff aside. Our beds are full. So help us out. Finally, the Missouri government was like, oh, okay. Yeah, even though we're a red state, we got to help you out here. And so they did, finally, yesterday. Release information that they were going to seek help from other states to get help in Missouri.
So this is Philip here. I just wanted to jump in on the testing. So I don't know. Like I'm not a virologist. I'm not a doctor. Like not a financial advisor. But I did go to college for molecular biology. And so one of the things about a virus is it's like a little bag of a small chunk of DNA or RNA. So once you've identified like that variant, you basically have a genomic sequence for it. It's such a small chunk of it. Once you get it, they can do like this CRISPR test, which is basically how I assume they do it, But they can run that entire genome of that virus and tell which variant it is, just like they would do any genetic test. And it wouldn't be all that slow right. to do. So
right,
that's
but you're not.
It's not like a litmus test where they do the swab, they put it in something, dip in a strip, and it goes, oh, it turned pink. You've got the Delta variant. It's they can actually see, and that's what these
I
tests
know,
are.
But that's my point. My point is they're not going and doing genetic testing on every single person that gets tested. They do these 15-minute swab tests. They're like, oh, nope, you're negative.
It doesn't take that long to do the sequencing, but anyway. That's just.
I mean, well, are they when they? I mean, so when they have them in the beds, I mean, and they're saying that 87% of these cases now at the hospitals are where they're having hospitalizations. So, what would be the procedure then? They're in the hospital. They're probably drawing their blood, I would imagine, right? And is that where they're then seeing this Delta variant right there?
Yeah, I mean, they would have to run. It's either that, or it could be that the Delta variant has a different because the outside of a virus all has. Like a sugar signature on the outside of it is how it attaches to things, and so it could just be that they've identified that. I mean, there's so many different ways of identifying this stuff, and none of it takes very long. I mean, they can run an entire genomic sequence pretty quick, especially on something this viral because it's so tiny. It's such a small amount; it doesn't take that long to do. Or they could be looking at other things. I mean, it's way within the realm of possibility that they can do this in 15 minutes to identify what type of virus it is.
Carol in our chat says vaccinated people can be asymptomatic and spread the Delta variant. Don't blame just unvaccinated people. Yeah, great point, Carol. And no one's blame. I mean, all we're pointing out is the fact that the CDC is warning that this is the most contagious and fastest spreading disease that they've ever seen in their careers that they've ever seen. And if you're unvaccinated, and what they're saying is, you can expect to get the Delta variant, like if you're not taking precautions within 60 to 90 days, especially as we head into the fall. So my wife just got her second dose of the vaccine, so she's fully done. She got the Pfizer one, I got the J&J one, so we're fully vaccinated here. So, you know, take it in your own hands at this point. But the real question this morning is, for a lot of people, you know, is it too late? And this is what we were talking about yesterday, a doctor saying, trying to plead with people. She, you know, she's trying to get her message out there about the people that she's now seeing in her hospital bed. There's a doctor in Alabama. She's gone viral for this, that she's basically saying, hey, look, people are saying I'm here. They're on their, now they've been intubated. And once they've been intubated, you know, you're having assistance, getting breath, right? Getting breathing tubes inserted and now respirator. So once you're intubated, they're like, oh my God, you know, can I get the vaccine now? And very often intubation and then that ends up leading to someone, you know, having collapsed lungs or perhaps dying of the disease. And she's saying, no, it's too late. Like once you're at this stage, it's too late to go back and now get a vaccine. Like you've already caught it. You already have it. And now you're in our hospital bed being intubated. So here is what she had to write. This has gone viral. She put this out on her Facebook page. This is Brittany Cobia, Dr. Brittany Cobia. She says, I've made a lot of progress encouraging people to get vaccinated lately. Do you want to know how? I'm admitting young, healthy people to the hospital with various serious COVID infections. One of the last things they do before they're intubated is beg me for the vaccine. I hold their hand and I tell them that I'm sorry, but it's too late. A few days later, when I call the time of death, I hug their family members and I tell them the best way to honor their loved one is to get vaccinated and encourage everyone they know to do the same. They cry. They tell me they didn't know. They thought it was a hoax. They thought it was political. They thought because they had a certain blood type or a certain skin color, they wouldn't get as sick. They thought it was just the flu, but they were wrong, and they wish they could go back, but they can't. So they thank me, and they go get the vaccine. And I go back to my office, write their death note, and say a small prayer that this loss will save more lives. As always, I'm an open book. Please bring me your questions, and I will tell you everything I know and everything I don't. It's not too late, but someday it might be. And then she thanks Dr. David Wilhelm for sharing some other medical knowledge that she tweets about. Dr. David Wilhelm put this out. Delta variant COVID is now present in all 50 states, and COVID hospital admissions are up nationwide 40%. Delta is more contagious and is attacking more aggressively in younger age groups compared to previous COVID strains. I will repeat my statement from last week. If you haven't had COVID and are unvaccinated, there is a significant likelihood you'll get Delta variant COVID in the next 60 to 90 days. If that offends any of you, then so be it. There is no more time to sugarcoat this. Vaccines are readily available and your best tool to fight this infection. Almost 99% of all COVID deaths are now in those who are not vaccinated. Don't wait until it's too late. Dr. Wilhelm, MD. Really, I mean, you know, hearing from these doctors in that case, you know, I'm not a doctor. They're seeing this. They're seeing these people on their deathbeds. And this has gone viral this morning as well. Trump supporters who are now coming forward after having lost a loved one in the hospital, crying and pleading with people. So you're seeing Republicans. We saw Sean Hannity make a big plea for it the other night. We saw a number of other conservative media outlets pushing for people to get vaccinated. You have clergy around the country, which are now trying to tell their congregations who before they were sort of skeptical and not pushing it. Now they're trying to get their flock vaccinated. And now you have Trump supporters coming forward who've lost a loved one, lost a husband, and literally on their deathbed, sending out Facebook messages saying, look, I didn't believe this either. Now I'm dying. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to the politics. Go and get vaccinated. Watch this. This is here's the wife of her husband, the Trump supporter husband who just passed away just a few days ago. Here's what she has to say about it.
I'll never have again.
Oh, it's a sister.
And it could have been prevented. And that's the part that's probably the hardest thing for me.
Memories of their life together as siblings, bittersweet. She says she spent the last year urging her brother to get vaccinated as soon as he could.
And I said, Brad, I'm begging you. And it got where I just had to stop as a big sister because I'm his oldest sister. It's always nag, nag, nag. And I feel guilty sometimes for not pushing it harder.
Mia says the couple didn't seek out the COVID vaccination because they weren't ready.
We weren't vaccinated. We wanted to wait and see how people reacted to it, but we waited too long.
Brad sharing a message to his friends on Facebook in his final days of life.
His last post was, please go get vaccinated. This is nothing nice. That was his last post.
So
Trump supporter who was anti-vaccine gets COVID, dies, and then tells all of his friends, this is real, go get the vaccine. What do you guys think about that? Love to hear what your thoughts are on that. Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about Wall Street holding up additional stimulus checks. This is no joke. Wall Street holding up additional stimulus checks. While the American people are demanding additional stimulus checks, an overwhelming number of stimulus checks are being demanded by the American people. And it's incredibly popular. And what do you know about it? What do you know? The American Wall Street wants to make sure that you don't get access to stimulus money because it'll affect their bottom line, I suppose, which I can't wrap my head around, but we'll tell you that report, an amazing new report out this morning. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Scoremaster. Did you know that the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster crack the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How many people, just curious, watching right now, have a credit score that they know they could improve? Even if it's, you know, like 90, like we talked about, 97 points. I'm curious. Let me know in the chat. You know, how fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, try Scoremaster free and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Just go to scoremaster.com/invest. That's scoremaster.com/invest. Again, scoremaster.com/invest in order to get that free access there. So check it out. Fastest way to your best credit score. So our thanks to them. All right, now next on the rundown. So Wall Street and their stimulus. We've got a new report out this morning. I want everyone to go and download this report. It's totally free. I get a lot of great information from their reports. If you go to futuremoneytrends.com/hold, get access to this amazing report, which shows you, let me pull this up here on my screen here. Here's the report. Here's what it looks like when you go and grab it. So just go to futuremoneytrends.com/hold. And their new report details exactly what's happening about Wall Street and how Wall Street hates stimulus checks. Basically, anything that helps Main Street, the middle class, hardworking Americans, it's a no-go. And the fat cats have the wherewithal to blockade any proposed legislation before it has a chance to gain traction. Literally involved in these discussions right now, Wall Street. Yesterday, it was interesting to see President Biden and in the Roosevelt room holding meetings on stimulus. And guess who was left out of those meetings? Guess who was left out? Progressives were kept out of the room. But big money, Wall Street was there. Big business were in the room. Sure, you can bet that was the case. In fact, I know it was the case because we had reporting from senators who were in the room and progressives who were kept out of the room. But hey, you know, if you've got money, you've got influence, you can have a seat at the table. So here's what this new report in part says. And again, I want you to download it. But the report, it's not plugged in there. The report says, let's be clear, Wall Street hates stimulus checks. Anything that helps Main Street, the middle class, hardworking Americans, is a no-go. And the fat cats have the wherewithal to blockade and any proposed legislation before it has a chance to gain traction. Back in March, you heard about legislators at the top levels of government calling for reoccurring direct payments to the American people. This was supposed to be included, by the way, in President Biden's next economic recovery package. And what we saw with the American Rescue Plan, the one-time direct payments, or the extension of unemployment insurance programs, those managed to get through the legislative process, but it was a Band-Aid. It was a Band-Aid. And I'm talking about recurring stimulus was being pushed by many members of Congress. Single direct payments have been essential, but they don't last long for most families. And there's a looming cliff that we're obviously facing with unemployed workers. And we saw yesterday troubling unemployment data and jobless numbers yesterday. That's why Wall Street this morning is like, what do we do? What's going on here? We thought we were on Easy Street and suddenly we're not. There's plenty of data to support these ongoing benefits of recurring direct payments to families that need them the most. What the U.S. public says and they spent on their stimulus. And why is this not taking my screenshot here? Laptop is not showing up all of a sudden, unfortunately. But what the public says is that how they spent their money on stimulus. Paid bills, 41% said they paid their bills. They bought groceries, 33%. 28% bought household essentials. 25% put it in a savings account. 24% paid their rent or mortgage. And we're going to get to the coming eviction crisis here in a few moments on the show. Paid down debt or donated some monies to charity. So even if they didn't spend it themselves, they helped other people in donating some of this money to help other people. Isn't that amazing?
Monsters.
Yeah, you absolute monsters.
You know how different this whole thing would have been if because, you know, like there were quite a few people that used that stimulus for crypto trading. That's like, you know, you realize this story would be entirely different if people were like, hey, let's start throwing some of this money to Wall Street. Wall Street would be like, you know what? We really need UBI. You know, it'd be that fast.
I mean, look at this chart. It's great. Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, my gosh, if we need universal basic income, boom, they'd be all over it like stink on a monkey.
Yep.
41% paid their bills. Like when you guys got your stimulus payments, what did you guys spend it on? Let me know inside the chat here. Where did you guys spend your stimulus money on? The Urban Institute study indicates that a single direct payment of $1,200 combined with an extension of enhanced unemployment insurance and other assistance could keep 12 million Americans out of poverty. So this report goes into detail about how how Wall Street has stepped in and is stopping our ability to get stimulus checks. So you can thank big business and Wall Street. And look at the affordability house index right now. So while Wall Street is raking in huge money, huge profits, Americans can't afford to buy houses, Americans can't afford to buy groceries, Americans can't pay their medical bills, and they don't want you to have additional stimulus. And again, big business, Wall Street, is driving everything that the Biden administration is doing right now and Congress. And by the way, there's no difference than before. It's always been this way. So no difference. Like when Biden back in the day said, hey, nothing fundamentally will change when I'm elected president. He's right. to go through this report a little bit more. While Americans do want to work and stimulus payments certainly aren't free, the benefits would be undeniable. The Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University affirmed that direct payments to the people are effective at curtailing economic insecurity and hardship. JP Morgan Chase concluded that people spend more when direct stimulus payments are sent out, and that's money flowing back into the U.S. economy. Isn't it funny that JP Morgan, which is one of the big banks that's fighting this, fighting stimulus checks, actually in their own study concluded that it flows back into the U.S. economy, therefore helping banks and businesses?
Didn't they, wasn't JP Morgan Chase, wasn't that one of the ones that held on to stimulus checks for a good 3 or 4 days to skim a little bit off that interest?
Yeah, people were complaining. Why is Chase? Well, like I didn't get my payment. Chase Bank just made like some nice little profits on the interest that was being collected before they dispersed it to their people and their banks.
But they hate it. They hate it.
The media can talk about recovery all day long, but in America, around 14 million people are receiving some form of jobless assistance. Unemployment rate hit 5.9%, which is considerably higher than the pre-pandemic level of 3.5%. I mean, I don't know about you, but how many people watching right now are still having trouble covering your expenses? Let me know in the chat. Kristen Swenson says they're starting to finally see the fallout of what happens when you keep a civilization oppressed and rob them of their lives. They're feeling the effects of their own causation. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, again, it comes down to that difference. I know you've said it many times, but it's just so true that Wall Street is not the economy. It's not how well Wall Street is doing is not how well the rest of us are doing. Because rarely any of that money ever comes down anyway. That trickle down didn't really ever take.
No, so of course. Trickle down never works.
Yeah,
never works.
So like all that Wall Street money stays at the top.
Always. We know that trickle down economics doesn't work. Money has consolidated even further at the top, while the rest of Americans get scraps. Kristen Miller says, "We paid off our bills. We bought a travel trailer that we now live in, paid off my husband's truck, and paid off a lot of bills thanks to stimulus." Improving their life. Improving their life. Imagine. Sharon Miller says it's tight covering the bills, food especially. Just living my life, Becky says. Just trying to live my life. Everything is so high, Lioness says. Bills and buying household items and food, Jean says. Yeah, unemployment numbers down in Florida because they locked a lot of us out of the system even after the ID verification, Gina says. Unbelievable. And someone says, where's Grover? Where's Grover? I think he's over on the chair. He's not there. Thought he was, but he's not right now. He's out running around the kids. But so grab that report. I mean, I get a lot of great information from their reports. They do a lot of great work. And really calling for you to contact your leaders. Contact your leaders in Washington. Go to this website, grab this report, share this with your friends, by the way. It's futuremoneytrends.com/hold. It's a free report. It's really interesting. And, be armed with this data when you're arguing with people about stimulus checks. Like, there's some really fascinating data in here about what Wall Street is doing. Really unbelievable. I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, even yesterday, the new ambassador jobs by the Biden administration are being filled by corporate lobbyists. Former Comcast exec is now one of Biden's newest lobbyists, or one of his newest ambassadors. You know, if you're a business guy, you're a corporate, one of these big corporatists. Hey, you can get a job in the Biden administration, no problem. No problem. Derek Yed says, yeah, food is so expensive for myself. It cost me over $100 for myself. It's ridiculous, the cost of food right now. And A. Magnificent says, eviction is looming. Yeah, eviction is looming. And that's what we're going to get to next. So let's talk about rental assistance, guys. That's the next story in the show that I want to get to. Really troubling data on what's happening with rental assistance in the United States. So we now know that billions have been set aside for rental assistance. Billions of dollars have been set aside for rental assistance. But where is that money? Where is the money for rental assistance? Well, it turns out that just a fraction of the dollars that have been set aside for getting rental assistance out to people have gone out. Just a fraction. Absolute small pittance. State and local officials dispersed only $1.5 billion in federal rental assistance in June, the Treasury Department reported Wednesday morning. That brings the total rental aid distributed over the first 6 months of the year to little over $3 billion. About 6.5% of the total that Congress has allocated. I mean, where is this money? Why are we not seeing it? Why is it not being sent out? And by the way, July 31st, as that eviction moratorium winds down, we are going to see a flood of evictions in the United States. So July 31st, guys, I mean, we are going to see a wave of foreclosures. Here's The Economist this morning. In Miami, as elsewhere, a house price boom, housing crisis could happen at the same time. This is the real housing crisis that no one's talking about. You know, people want to talk about runaway prices. That's one thing. People can't afford a house. That's one thing. But all of the people that are about to lose their homes because we're not doing anything about it, that's the real housing crisis. You think you already see homeless people setting up tents outside of San Francisco and underneath overpasses in California and in Washington, D.C., right outside of the Federal Reserve building, people setting up tents and tent cities to live in? People can't afford this stuff anymore, and they're being pushed out. Rents are up, too, by 24% year on year. Like Miami, the magic city, soaks up newly untethered teleworkers. Ecstatic real estate agents describe a bonanza. Sellers are waiving inspections and appraisals entirely, buying units sight unseen and aggressively bidding up the prices. One agent tells a client bidding $50,000 above values of the home, the appraised value, and still got rejected and beat by another offer. So there's a push right now to see, well, can we actually get this eviction moratorium at least push back a little bit further until we can do something about it? When you set aside $60 billion for rental assistance and yet states aren't helping people get access to this money. Remember, the states are the ones that have to distribute this money because that's how the states wanted it. So the states get access to this money and only $1.5 billion has been distributed? Think about how many hoops and hurdles you have to jump over in order to try to get this stuff in your state. I mean, Congress approved more than $46 billion in rental assistance between December and March for both tenants and landlords, but getting it into their hands has proved challenging. And it depends on their income and where they live. But they could get enough rent to cover as far back as March 13th of 2020. All the way back and get you fully caught up on your rent. But where do you get it? However, many states and cities don't have the infrastructure in place to distribute the money. According to the Treasury Department, data obtained by CBS shows that more than $1.5 billion in assistance was delivered to eligible households, an 85% increase from the previous month. It's not going to happen, though, in time. Do you think you guys are going to be able to get access to rental income assistance here in the next few days before this July 31st deadline? And you have this eviction moratorium lifted, done? Will the Biden administration sign an executive order pushing it back even further? This is something you can call upon your state representatives. Call them, ask them, beg them, write to the White House, demand that they put this in place. If you're going to lose your home, what are we going to see across the United States? A massive wave of homelessness. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in the United States. I mean, maybe back to Great Depression levels, perhaps.
You can finish your statement.
I was just going to ask you, like, what is it like where you live? But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So, like a week or two ago, I was driving. It's kind of a popular out of the way road called Marine Drive that runs along the Columbia here in Portland. And there's maybe five or six like unsanctioned homeless camps where it's basically all tents and broke down RVs. Just along that whole stretch, there's no infrastructure. There's no, like garbage collection or running water or anything like that. They're just and I'm talking like 15 to 20 different like living structures. And it is like that everywhere, everywhere in Portland. Any place that there's a bit of public space that's like flat enough that somebody can put up a tent, you'll see 8 to 10 tents, like these just tiny little like mobile nomadic villages, and they are just everywhere. Oh, and that's in like a city that's, you know, like, I guess you say like typically thought of as very progressive and very, you know, like that should have all of these radically progressive ideals, and still it's just everywhere. It's
unbelievable.
It was depressing. It was maybe a half hour drive from where I was going, and there were like six along Marine Drive that I counted, and then just you take a turn onto another area like the Delta Park area, and they're just everywhere you see these things. They're just like these little, you know, 10 to 15 different living, basically like 10 to 15 different families just living on public space because they have nowhere to go.
Trevoria in our chat says, yeah, people here in Tennessee begged the governor not to end the unemployment, but he did. I can't wait till he gets voted out. Jonathan Stewart says, time for a new government. Your Imperial Majesty says, this is horrible. I mean, this is the state of housing in the United States. And to your point, I mean, if we want to look at state by state, you know, you got new construction going up all over the place. Mortgage interest rates at an all-time low. So that's not the housing crisis we're going to see. People that, you know, can't get a loan. The banks are still only loaning at the appraised value. So they're not underwater. They have to prove that they have employment, that they can pay the loan. So that's not the type of housing crisis we're talking about. What we're talking about is runaway prices and people being pushed out of their homes. It's like a two-pronged problem right now. And massive income inequality. So you'll have people that make good a salary and are making good money that will be living in homes, and then you will have everyone else who's pushed out and living in tents, like Philip's talking about. Well, let's go through this state by state. Look at this. So here's Alabama. Alabama, is there a hold on evictions? No. Alabama, is there a hold on utility shutoffs? No. Alaska, hold on evictions? No. No on utilities being shut off. Arizona, no, no. Arkansas, no, no. California, yes, until September. And yes on utilities being cut off through September. And again, this is a local ban, so this is just California. Colorado, no and no. Connecticut, no and no. Delaware, yes on eviction bans and no on utilities being turned off. So great, you can live in the house, but the utilities will be turned off. No running water, no heat. District of Columbia. Yeah. DC, right? Which isn't even a state, which doesn't even have statehood. Yes, until after the emergency. Yes. So, hey, good place to live is DC, I guess. Florida, no and no. Georgia, no and no. Hawaii, yes. Some of the other day said, hey, can you do some more Hawaii news on the show? Here you go. Aloha. Hawaii actually has an eviction ban for another few weeks, just beyond that July 31st deadline. So, just like another few days. And utilities being turned off? Nope. Idaho, no and no. Illinois, yes, through the first, just one day extra. So Illinois, Indiana, no and no. Iowa, no and no. Kansas, no, no. Kentucky, no, no. Louisiana, no, no. Maine, no, no. Maryland, yes, through the 15th of August. Massachusetts, no and no. Michigan, no and no. Minnesota, through August 13th. And sort of a confusion in Michigan and Minnesota, I guess. Mississippi, no and no. Missouri, no and no. Montana, no, no. Nebraska, no, no. Nevada, no, no. New Hampshire, no, no. New Jersey, yes, until the end of the emergency plus 2 months. So just right now, hey, what is the state of emergency? But yes, you can have your utilities turned off in New Jersey. So, okay. That's going to be great when a cold winter approaches with no heat and water. New Mexico, yes, there's an eviction ban. No, on utilities being turned off. So that'll be turned off. Yes, New York through 8/31, and yes, on utilities being turned off. North Carolina, no and no. North Dakota, no, no. Ohio, no, no. Oklahoma, no, no. Oregon, no and no. Yes, through for utilities through just a few more days in Oregon. Pennsylvania, no and no. Rhode Island, no, and yes for certain customers on utilities. South Carolina, no, no. South Dakota, no, no. Tennessee, no, no. Texas, no, no. Utah, I mean, look at our country. This is our country. No and no on Utah, yes, through, actually, that already passed in Vermont, so that's done. Virginia, no. another 60 days on utilities after the state of emergency. Washington, and finally, yes, eviction through 9th. So Washington State up through the through September. West Virginia, no and no. Wisconsin, no, no. Wyoming, no and no. There you go. That's nolo.com. Nolo.com. Eviction ban.
It just amazes me, like, where, so like while these people are sitting in Congress and they're working so hard to get the people at the top the money that they want that so they can contribute to their campaigns, where do they think these people are going to go that get kicked out of their homes but can't afford rent anywhere else because it's been driven so high? Like, where do they think those people are going to go? You know, like it's not like you can just sit there and go like, oh, well, they're just lazy. They need to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. Like, there's literally nowhere to go.
And homeless shelters are overrun. We had people here on our show saying they tried to go into a homeless shelter and they were turned away because they're full. So homeless shelters are full. Eviction moratorium ends on July 31st. Rental assistance payments are still sitting there, not being dispersed. By the way, that rental assistance was put in place in December under Trump. And it's still only $1.6 billion has been rolled out, which would allow you to get caught up on your payments all the way back to the beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020. Imagine that. You could literally have all of your debt wiped away. Oh, if only states would get their act together and disperse it, but they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the computers. They don't have anything. Richest country in the world. Stop telling me we're the greatest country in the world. Stop it. Stop it. Prove it to me.
You know, it reminds me of there was a long running homeless camp in Portland called Right to Dream 2. And it was just a big empty lot downtown Portland. And so they'd kind of built a fence around it, had like enough infrastructure that they could do it. And it was like run as like a small little, you know, like homeless shelter city kind of thing, but it was all outdoors. And people complained and kept suing the owner of the lot who allowed it to happen until they finally were like, okay, we have to move this camp. So the best place for it, they were going to move it, and it was too close to an affluent neighborhood. And then the same people that complaining that it existed to begin with were like, no, you can't move it over here. I mean, where do they, you know, it's like, that's what I say. It's like, where do they think these people are going to go? It's like, you know, what are they going to start like throwing homeless camps on golf courses? Then what's going to happen? You know,
right. So, I mean, they did that in Los Angeles. They set up, you know, basically in the 90s, they like cordoned off downtown part of downtown Los Angeles, and it became like a homeless zone. It became like a lawless, homeless crime zone. Just awful. You know, they put up like fences around it. They like cordoned it off. Just, this is America. You know, you want to talk about a safety net to be able to provide this. You don't see this in Europe.
Yeah.
You don't see this. I mean, you don't see homelessness. Well, people are taken care of.
I'm pretty sure it was Salt Lake City that just was like, you know what? We're going to solve our homelessness problem by building housing, giving it free to whoever needs it, and no strings attached. They didn't have to go to, you know, like rehab or any kind of like, you know, religiously backed like services or anything like that. They're just like, here you go, here's a place, and boom, it was done. And it was 10 times cheaper for them to do that than it was to continually deal with like just nomadic people with no infrastructure trying to live their life.
Unbelievable. Tyler asked the question, how if they're homeless, how if they're homeless, were they able to watch your show? Well, we literally had one person who was a mom, a single mom with her daughter. She had a cell phone. She was able to watch our show. She was looking for information on the stimulus. She found our show. She was looking for assistance, and she was able to watch our show on her cell phone. She was living in her car with her daughter. We had another viewer who's literally would in nothing. He lived in his car. He lived in an old car. That's where he lived and watched our show. So that's how.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's been several viewers over the past year or two that have been in that same situation.
Or they're watching us literally in a homeless shelter on the TV in the community room at the homeless shelter. Isn't that amazing? Like that's what we've come to. Unbelievable. We're going to talk about increased wages in a minute. You won't believe what President Biden actually said right to business owners. I couldn't believe it. So could we see a bigger and renewed push for increased wages across the United States? We'll get there in just a second. Today's show is brought to you by Money Talks, the Economist award-winning weekly podcast. I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan of The Economist, by the way. When I first The first magazine I ever bought with my own money, The Economist. And when I met my wife, Natalie, one of the only magazines that she subscribed to was The Economist. It was love at first sight. So we both have a fascination with The Economist. And anytime they make something, I devour it, including their podcast. So the Money Talks podcast is awesome. They answer amazing questions like, will cryptocurrencies replace cash? Does the world still need banks? Another question they did on a show, has COVID-19 broken economics? All of this is in this podcast. So you can find answers to all of these questions and more in Money Talks, The Economist, award-winning weekly podcast on the markets, the economy, and business. Join The Economist's global network of correspondents, plus business leaders and industry insiders across the globe. Enjoy jargon-free discussion, incisive analysis, and informed insights on what makes the world go round. Did you know, for example, that there is one product on earth that the world economy depends on? And guess what? Did you know what happens when the factory actually makes it? It grinds to a halt? Well, they answer this on the show. Sustainable investing has been accused of greenwashing. So the team from The Economist has actually investigated this and crunched the numbers themselves to see the real impact. And they give us real data, real analysis. Imagine that in this time and place. They also looked into the archives and studied what working from home looks like throughout history and the broader impact on labor rights throughout the world. And they take to two wheels to uncover the hidden economics of food delivery. All of this and more, you must check out Money Talks every week from The Economist. Subscribe and listen for free right now on Apple Podcasts or Acast or Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Go and subscribe. It's Money Talks by The Economist. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Yeah, so great, great podcast. Check that out. All right, let's talk about our final story of the day, and that is President Biden on wages. So President Biden held a town hall meeting. A lot of weirdness was, I mean, the performance of Don Lemon on CNN was very bizarre. How many of you caught this thing? But anyway, one question, though, did come from the audience on getting people hired. And what are we going to do about this? And the president gave a surprisingly, like, oh my God, I can't believe he actually said that to a business owner's face, to a restaurant owner on wages. Take a listen.
President, he is a Republican. John.
Hi there, Mr. Hey, President. I thank you for taking my question tonight. We employ hundreds of hardworking team members throughout the state of Ohio and across the country, and we're looking to hire more every day as we try to restart our restaurant business. The entire industry, amongst other industries, continue to struggle to find employees. How do you and the Biden administration plan to incentivize those that haven't returned to work yet? Hiring is our top priority right now.
Well, two things. One, if you notice, we kept you open. We spent billions of dollars to make sure restaurants could stay open. And a lot of people who worked as waiters and waitresses decided that they don't want to do that anymore because there's other opportunities at higher wages, because there's a lot of openings now in jobs. And people are beginning to move. There's some evidence that maintaining the ability to continue to not have to pay your rent so you don't get thrown out, and being able to provide for unemployment insurance, has kept people from going back to work. There's not much distinction between not going back to work in a restaurant and not going back to work at a factory. So people are looking to change opportunities.
Wow. He just said that right to his face. Hey, maybe you guys should pay your employees more. Instead of $2 an hour and crappy working conditions with no benefits, you know what? These people, like during the pandemic, they're like, you know what? Maybe I want a better life for myself. Maybe I want to change careers. I want to, you know, I'm going to spend some time learning a new skill, and I'm actually going to go out there and get a better job instead of being treated like crap by these companies. Imagine that. He actually said that right to his face.
That's what they're doing. My deceased wife's father-in-law was a restaurateur up in Syracuse, New York. And by the way, he tried to convince, he had a restaurant that was in a town called Auburn, about 20,000 people, which was sort of flagship 24-hour a day restaurant that, and he offered it to me, which I would have been making five times that I would in law school to try to keep me in Syracuse. But I spent too many times at home hearing, in his home, hearing a phone call, The cook didn't come in. He's in fight with his wife. What's going on? So
exactly.
God love you doing what you do. But all kidding aside, I think it really is a matter of people deciding now that they have opportunities to do other things, and there is a shortage of employees. People are looking to make more money and to bargain.
Wow. He said it. He said it out loud. So what are you going to do about it, Mr. President? Of course, the renewed push now comes for increase in minimum wage. I mean, imagine if like that restaurant actually, instead of paying, and he actually goes on to say, like, you know, maybe not paying $2 an hour, maybe paying $15 an hour, maybe actually paying, like, by the way, that's still a poverty wage. It still doesn't keep up with inflation. And now we see rising costs of inflation. What would you do for $15 an hour? People are getting $2 an hour at restaurants. Minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. What if you got $15 an hour? How much can you guys buy for $15 an hour at the supermarket? Like, what does that even cover? That covers maybe like a grouping of bananas. I don't know. Let's play this out a little bit. Like, what do you think you could even buy at the supermarket for $15? Like, 1 hour of work can get you maybe like a bunch of bananas, like a little grouping of bananas. I don't know. Maybe you need some vitamins. You buy some, you know, vitamin D or something at the grocery store. That's probably $20 or something, right? So no, it's probably not even enough. What do you guys think in the chat that you could actually buy for $15 an hour? Not much, Arlene says. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, milk. Maybe you could buy like a gallon of milk or something but I don't even drink milk. I'm an adult. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. So what do you need milk for? Unless you're baking something. Eggs, maybe? You get what does a dozen eggs cost? My wife always does the shopping. So I don't know what eggs cost.
I just did like the really quick math here, but like if I made $15 an hour, I would have to work 86, almost 87 hours for rent.
Jeez.
So like over 2 weeks of work just to make rent.
Yeah. And as Robert points out, keep in mind, they don't even get 8 hour days. So back to square one. Mark Spark says you could get some instant coffee and a large peanut butter. That's about it. I mean, yeah, a loaf of bread. Yeah. Maybe you should start paying them 15 at least, you know, and then they can make tips on top of that.
And so I think your business and the tourist business is really going to be in a bind for a little while. One of the things, we're ending all those things that are there are things keeping people back from going back to work, et cetera. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But my gut tells me that part of it relates to, you know, you can make a good salary as a waiter or waitress. One of my sister-in-laws is of five sisters, makes a very good salary. She works in Atlantic City. That's where she's from. But it is, there's a lot of people who are looking to change their occupation, so, I think, but I could be wrong.
Well, let me ask you, because John is looking to hire people. He's got 39 restaurants across the country.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can do to help him out? I mean, he's got to get people in.
Well, John, first of all, the thing we did to help John and the Johns out is provide billions of dollars to make sure they could stay open, number one. So you all contributed to making sure John could stay in business. And we should.
So now that you've made all these profits and you've been making money, maybe it's time to increase wages for people. What? It's remarkable, the data on what happens when you actually increase wages for people, right? Employee retention, better quality of life, lower stress, happier employers, more productivity, and more profit. So maybe it's time, John, for, you know, you're looking for some other answer. How can you keep, you know, screwing employees? Maybe pay them better. Maybe that's just an idea, you know, instead of $2 an hour for these servers, maybe actually pay them well. You got to fly in here and sit and talk with the president, right? While your employees are making $3 an hour waiting tables and hoping on tips, and they don't get benefits. They're working terrible conditions. Yeah, you know, that's what it looks like. 39 restaurants. Yeah. Yeah, that's my thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Drop me a comment below. Should we raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour? or beyond. I mean, I've been calling for at least in the 20s to keep up with inflation and the poverty level, as Philip just said. What? How many hours you would need to work? 87.
It was 86.66. So $87, 87 hours just for rent. That's not utilities. That's not anything else. That's purely rent. So over 2 weeks of a normal 40-hour work week. I mean, yeah. I could pull it off in a week, but I mean, then that ends up being like sort of the hidden cost of poverty. Is like it's so much more expensive to be poor because like if I am making $15 an hour, even that's still poverty. But let's say if I am making $15 an hour, I go to the grocery store. What can I get? Like processed stuff, like SpaghettiOs. I'm eating cans of SpaghettiOs and things like all this processed food. So then I'm unhealthy. So then the healthcare costs that I can't afford insurance. So then I have to, you know, like do emergency room services and get hit with all these bills. And it's just like, it is so expensive living that way.
Right. And then, you know what, we end up paying more for that type of, instead of having preventative care, making sure that people are taken care of, they don't have to eat crappy food. Look, I lived in Southern West Virginia, you know, in Bluefield, and I mean, horrible access to fresh foods. I mean, everyone sort of ate fast food and junk food and salty, highly processed food. No wonder it was like highly unhealthy. You know, people were struggling. They had to build a heart center nearby because they had to deal with so many people with heart attacks. So they had, it was all this talk when I was there about building a heart center. Why do you need to build a heart center? Why? Because so many people are eating crap food and they're having heart attacks and heart disease. So yeah, I mean, it just continues. So don't tell me that we're the greatest country in the world. Stop lying to me about that. But thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and being a part of our show every day. I really appreciate that. Please hit that like and subscribe button. Make sure that you're a long-term supporter of the show. Really, really appreciate that. And we'll be back again with another live show. If you want to join us for some live trading here, you can on my other channel. Just go to youtube.com/ClaytonMorris. I'll be over there doing some live trades on this Friday. Grover says thanks for tuning in today. Philip, thanks for stepping in.
Hey, yeah, always glad to do it.
And we will be back with another episode of Morning Invest. Keeping it real. Thanks for all of your support, guys. We'll see you next time, everyone.